You're listening to another.
Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is August the 14th, 2015. Summer moving very quickly over the horizon. Pretty soon it'll be back to fall, back to work for the kids out there, and back to the usual routine for everybody else. Meanwhile, I hope you've all had a great week. I have a little bit of something going on with the Kermit the Frog in my throat, so bear with me this evening. But it is great to join you, play that game of catch-up. Those of you who are familiar with me know that I'm a retired senior special agent with the Foreign Immigration Service, and it's my background with immigration that I bring to bear on this program whenever possible to provide you with the information that you need to have concerning just how this immigration crisis and the failures of border security impact the lives of every American across the country. Those of you, again, familiar with me know about the websites, but if you're new to the program, I welcome you. I thank you for listening. My own personal website is michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, one word, michaelcutler.net. I've also been writing for many years for a terrific organization out in Santa Barbara, California, my friends at capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org, which is, of course, Californians for Population Stabilization. I'm also a columnist for Front Page Magazine, sponsored by the David Horowitz Freedom Center, Front Page Mag. I also write for Progressives for Immigration Reform, and in fact, I have a new article that should be coming out this week that I've written for them. And finally, The Social Contract has a quarterly journal, and this month I am very pleased that my article was the lead article, and it's about the threat we face from a terrorist attack, not unlike 9/11. And in fact, hard to believe as it is, we're coming up on the 14th anniversary of that horrific day. And what I focused on was the nexus between immigration failures and the ability of the terrorists to enter our country, embed themselves in the parlance of the 9/11 Commission, that is to say, hide in plain sight, and then kill many people. And it's not just 9/11. We've seen it at the Boston Marathon. We saw it with Faisal Shahzad, the Times Square bomber, who thankfully didn't injure anybody. But it could have been a disaster. He set off an SUV bomb in the middle of Times Square several years ago. And each one of those examples of international terrorism are really the result of a failure of the immigration system. But what I want to start out today when we talk about border security is to talk about a different issue that confronts what's supposed to be a secure border, and that is the ability of smugglers to bring contraband into the United States. Pardon me. You know, contraband are substances. And we keep hearing from the administration, you know, the borders could never be more secure, everything is right with the world. It's those right-wing lunatics who just can't be made happy. There was a while back, about 5 years ago, President Obama went to El Paso, Texas, a perfect place to go to talk about border security, right across the Rio Grande from, or right across the Mexican border in any event, from Nuevo Laredo, arguably the most violent city in all of Mexico because of the drug trade. And he said that the conservatives would not be happy until they built a moat and then put alligators in the moat. And the audience went wild, hooping and hollering and laughing and accepting this insanity from this president, where he ridiculed anybody who would dare suggest we should have a secure border, God forbid. And you know my background. I'm a registered Democrat. I've always voted as an independent. But this isn't a left-right issue, folks. This is a right-wrong issue. And a couple of months ago, I wrote an article for capsweb.org that the price and availability of heroin were the best metric to determine border security, not those doctored and altered bogus statistics from the Border Patrol about how many people are being arrested. And I don't blame the agents. This is the Department of Homeland Surrender at its worst. But anyway, the article that I wrote for Caps Web, and this was back on June 27th, heroin epidemic, the real metric for determining border security. And back then, I was astonished, concerned, that police departments, including the NYPD, were providing Narcan, which is the antidote to heroin overdoses, to their police officers. And, you know, I spent half my career with the Drug Task Force. I was the first INS agent assigned to DEA Intelligence in New York City, the Drug Enforcement Administration. We'd never seen that level of heroin addiction, that it's become so commonplace that police departments are providing the cops with the antidote and training in how to use it. I mean, think about that. That's the measure of border security, because heroin is not produced in the United States, and it's an illegal substance. You can't bring it in. It's contraband. So every gram of heroin, every gram of cocaine present in the United States provides clear, unequivocal, graphic evidence of a failure of border security. And, you know, my dad used to tell me that nothing is so good it couldn't be better, or get so bad it couldn't be worse, or be so, well, you understand the point, so forgive me. But the idea is that, in fact, it's gotten worse. Much as you thought this was it, police departments being given the antidote here in New York and across the country, it's gotten worse. It's gotten worse. And that's what I just wrote about for Front Page Magazine. And the title of the article, American Kids Pay Heavy Price for Obama's Border Failure, the Source of the Nation's Heroin Epidemic. Of course, the source is the porous border. If you want to know how bad it has now gotten, believe it or not, not just New York City, this is happening in Boston, it's happening elsewhere. In fact, Boston is also now providing heroin addicts with the opportunity to go to local police stations and receive treatment for heroin. Think about how widespread this problem has gotten and the impact this has on America and on American lives. Well, now, folks, public schools are now stocking the antidote to heroin overdoses, and school nurses are being trained in its use. Public schools. This is our nation's future. You know, we see all these demonstrations, Black Lives Matter, which I have to tell you is very upsetting to see, because this isn't black-white. You know, every life matters, irrespective of color, irrespective of religion, irrespective of ethnicity. This business about Black Lives Matter. Look, we should never be saying one life is more important than another life. And that's the message that I find very disconcerting. It should be that all lives matter. And if you're concerned about lives, and especially minority lives, look at the damage that is done to our young people when they become addicted to drugs. They become a slave to drugs. And most of the violence that's out there has a nexus, direct or indirect, with addiction and the drug trade. So for all the talk we hear about, oh my gosh, we can't have guns with extended magazines and all this other business, if you really want to go after the violence, you have got to go after the drugs. You have got to go after the gangs. If you want to provide young people with opportunities for success, you don't want them getting addicted to narcotics. This is all part of the fallout of this administration's willful neglect of border security and the enforcement of our immigration laws. And so now you have President Obama saying that we should be releasing quote-unquote nonviolent drug dealers who are doing time for trafficking narcotics to people. The outrage behind that is more than I could even begin to start to discuss rationally. If you want to talk about somebody caught with personal use quantities of drugs, and you say, okay, this is a medical issue, we could have that conversation. That might be intelligent. It might be reasonable because so many people are hooked and it is a problem. But when you're selling drugs to other people, you're destroying their lives and you're profiting by it. And very often the drug trade is involved with weapons. I can't begin to tell you how many guns we took off the street every time we arrested a drug dealer. The lunacy, oh, these are nonviolent drug dealers, and it's not a big deal. The only reason, perhaps, to Mr. Obama, and again, I'm saying this tongue-in-cheek, but maybe the problem is they just have a shortage now, not of drugs, but of people who can sell it on street corners. I mean, the level of addiction, the amount of heroin being used in the United States, the amount of money flowing from the United States to the drug cartels, and in the case of heroin in particular, terrorist organizations, is mind-boggling. We're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars. This is what we are doing to ourselves because this administration, and it's been a long time coming, look, let's be honest about it, George W., locked up Border Patrol agents who were doing their job and sent Border Patrol agents to secure the Iraqi border, leaving our border largely unprotected. I can't forget that image of George W. Bush standing there with Vicente Fox accusing the Minutemen of being vigilantes. The president standing with the president of Mexico, criticizing Americans who were so upset that ranchers were being killed, that their animals were being cut loose because they were cutting down fences, that there were bullet holes in their buildings and cars. It's both sides of the aisle. Make no mistake about it. But this administration, in my judgment, is flat out the worst. And we, the people, are paying the price. Our children are paying the price. So you're sending your kids off to school not knowing if perhaps some kid who's strung out on drugs will be sitting in the desk next to your son or daughter. Is that what our country has come down to? Failures of border security are not limited to the so-called border states. You know, and I keep making that same point. We are a country of 50 border states. And make no mistake, while lots of heroin does flow across the Mexican border, it also arrives in the ships. You know, I was the Marine Intelligence Officer for the Immigration and Naturalization Service back in the 80s. And we were looking for contraband and stowaways and ship jumpers. And when you go to places like Port Newark, Port Los Angeles, Port Miami, look at all those containers. Understand that the stuff, the drugs are coming in through containers. They're coming in the luggage of passengers, the luggage of the flight crews. They're coming across the borders, both north and south. We're being inundated. And this is a supply and demand problem. The demand for heroin, the demand for cocaine is in the stratosphere. And when was the last time you even saw commercials warning people about the dangers of drug abuse? I would love to see one-tenth of the effort to convince young people to not get hooked on drugs that they're doing with cigarette smoke commercials. Think of how many commercials you see about cigarette smoking and the dangers. The woman who's had her lung out, the woman who's got lung cancer and died, the guy who had the heart attack. You're inundated, and it's working. And it's working. Kid, I remember you'd have to sweep the sidewalk, and there'd be all these cigarette butts because people would walk by and flick the cigarette butt on the sidewalk. So when my parents were around, you know, or after they passed away, I have a house here in New York, you'd get out there with the broom and you'd have to sweep up the mess. There's no cigarette butts out there now. Almost nobody smokes, relatively speaking. I mean, some people do, but the numbers are way down. But yet, you don't see much on TV, if anything, about drug addiction. Mostly it's about prescription drugs, not about heroin, not about cocaine. We've developed a drug culture. And this drug culture is killing our children and killing their futures and destroying our country at the same time. This is not victimless. This is anything but victimless. But this report that now here in New York State, Governor Cuomo has allocated $272 million to providing the antidote to heroin. I mean, this is insanity. This is sheer lunacy. I'm sorry, I think it's 272,000. I've got to look at the numbers. But the point is, it's that pervasive that the governor of the state of New York is saying, let's provide the antidotes to heroin overdoses to the public school system. Doesn't that say it all? Doesn't that sum it all up? What is wrong with this administration and with our politicians is that because of this notion of trade and commerce and profit, they are willing to write off our kids. They are willing to write off America's future. And then ABC News, and I'm very critical about the mainstream media, but Brian Ross and one of his reporters did a really good story about the EB-5 visas. We hear much about the H-1B, the temporary work visa, where if you have a particular STEM profession, primarily science, technology, engineering, math, you're able to get a visa to come to the United States and work. And we're displacing Americans hand over fist. The EB-5 program says that if you can create jobs for 10 Americans and invest $500,000, we'll give you conditional residency in the United States, a green card. And there's absolutely no integrity to the process. This guy Mayorkas, who had been the head of Citizenship and Immigration Services, he was the director, had told his people when they were adjudicating applications for immigration benefits, they were to do everything in their power to get to yes. So they wound up being pressured to approve petitions and applications, whether it was for citizenship, whether it was for green cards, whatever, where the aliens involved did not meet the qualifications. And ABC News has learned that some of the people involved with this investor program were actually stopped from running the border at one point or another. There's an Iranian businessman who is involved now with being in the United States, making the investments. The obvious concern is that Iranians, and we are certainly not allied with them, look at what we're going through right now over their nuclear program. Their businessmen are actually getting those visas to reside in the United States. China was involved with a program where government office buildings had been constructed by them. The potential for espionage, staggering. We are selling our country to the highest bidder. We have truly reached the point where the administration should have a new cabinet position, that of the official auctioneer. We bring in foreign workers to do the high-tech jobs and the bottom-rung jobs. We're bringing in investors from other countries, even where we're not even certain that there's any integrity to that process, where the applications may not even be truthful. Then they talk about the investigations that are being conducted, and only being conducted, I might add, because of people like Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa, who's trying desperately to do the right thing. I was very privileged to testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee a year ago. Well, it was actually March of 2013, almost 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. It was Chuck Grassley who invited me to testify at that hearing about immigration and where we need to be with it. It was a great opportunity that he had provided, because he truly gets it, along with people like Senator Jeff Sessions, Congressman Louie Gohmert, Congressman Lou Barletta. There are some folks who get it. But all too many members of the Congress, right along with this administration, don't care. As long as they get their money, as long as they get what they want, they will sell America down the river, and it's both political parties. And this is far more than just the Mexican border. I was just interviewed today for the Daily Ledger, which is a terrific news program on One American News Network, and we started out talking about this terrible murder of a family by an illegal alien here in the United States. He killed his own family, in fact. And you look at a situation like that, and we talk about family reunification, the big war cry from the open borders crowd, we need family reunification. This family was killed by a relative. Many of these families don't want their relatives here. You know, the problem that nobody seems to want to take on, and I will, is that we have a lawful inspections process conducted at ports of entry. I did that job for the first 4 years of my career. We have over 20,000 people working for Customs and Border Protection dedicated to the inspection of people and cargo entering the United States. And if it doesn't matter whether or not people or cargo is being inspected when people run the border and smugglers can bring this, whatever it is they're bringing across that border without inspection, why in the world then do we bother inspecting anybody? Why do we spend billions of dollars on an inspections process if it doesn't matter how you come here? This notion that illegal aliens are undocumented when they run the border is madness. They are uninspected. They are trespassers. Nobody had the opportunity to check them out and determine whether or not it was safe to let them in. And we're told, oh, that's okay. They're just uninspected. They're just undocumented. They leave out the word uninspected. So the solution to somebody who's undocumented is to give them documents. Nonsense. This is one of the greatest lies ever concocted, and so many Americans, unfortunately, have fallen for that lie. Folks, we got to get our neighbors to understand the truth. When people run the border, when aliens run that border, they are uninspected. And aliens do not have an inherent right to be in the United States. Just as strangers don't have the right to walk into your home. This notion that somehow it's unfair to not admit strangers into the United States is madness. This is like me telling you that if you don't leave your door open to strangers, you're mean and cruel and unreasonable. The United States has the most generous immigration policies in the world. We admit more than a million lawful immigrants every year. That's more than the rest of the world combined. We naturalize hundreds of thousands of new citizens every year. And now, finally, Senator Jeff Sessions, another one of my real heroes in Washington, I wish he would run for president, is asking the administration for the statistics as to how many terrorists have actually been admitted into the United States, and the administration tries to hush it up. But quite a few people that have been involved with terrorism were people who were admitted into the United States. And, of course, the way the media gets around it, the artful dodges that they are, is to say, oh, these are homegrown. There have been, obviously, some homegrown terrorists. But so many of these terrorists that we're dealing with aren't homegrown. You know, Faisal Shahzad, the Times Square bomber, was identified by Ray Kelly, who at the time was the New York City Police Commissioner, identified him as a classic example of a homegrown terrorist. Faisal Shahzad came to the United States on a student visa when he was 20 years of age from Pakistan. How in the world is somebody who comes here at that age to be considered homegrown? And yet Ray Kelly, the police commissioner, said, oh, he's homegrown. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. There was an article in the Conservative Review by Daniel Horowitz, and it was published just yesterday, August 13th. Let me just read to you something. And, you know, I've had my disagreements with Ted Cruz over the H-1B visas, and that's not going away. But Ted Cruz and Jeff Sessions are looking real hard at this business about the terrorists who we've admitted into the country through the front door. The title of the article, Sessions, Cruz Demand Immigration History of Homegrown Terrorists. At Conservative Review, I'm reading from the article, we focused a lot this year on the nexus between politically correct immigration policies and risks to our national security. By the way, I'm going to momentarily tell you what my thoughts are about the use of the term politically correct. I disagree with that word, but we'll get to that in a moment. So anyway, they say about the politically correct immigration policies and risks to our national security. that in fact clamping down on immigration from volatile parts of the world is more important, prudent, and constitutional than engaging in nation building overseas or expanding the surveillance state. With the FBI warning that homegrown terror problem is growing out of control, especially among the ranks of families who emigrated from the Middle East, two conservative senators want answers on the danger of our immigration policies and the role it has played in homegrown terror. Senators Jeff Sessions, Republican from Alabama, Ted Cruz, Republican from Texas, have sent a letter to Attorney General Loretta Lynch, Secretary of Homeland Security Jay Johnson, and Secretary of State John Kerry, demanding answers regarding the immigration status of the growing list of individuals caught planning terror attacks, executing terror attacks, or flying abroad to fight for Islamic terror groups. In the letter, they state, in part, based on publicly available information, we have identified at least 72 individuals in the United States who over the last year have engaged in or attempted to engage in acts of terrorism, conspired or attempted to conspire to provide material support to a terrorist organization, engaged in criminal conduct inspired by terrorist ideology, or have been sentenced for any of the foregoing. We would like to understand more about these individuals and others similarly situated in recent history and the nexus between terrorism and our immigration system. And they're right. We keep on letting people into our country, and then they thank us by becoming involved in terrorism, looking to kill Americans, looking to kill law enforcement officials and our military, looking to fundraise in the United States to support terrorism overseas. This is an act of insanity. This is self-destructive. You know, I've done a bunch of TV appearances and congressional hearings where we talked about political asylum, and I'm a big fan of asylum. My grandmother died in the Holocaust. I was named for her. We have to be compassionate. But as I've said when I've been before congressional hearings on the issue, America's compassion must never be seen as weakness by our enemies and must not provide opportunities to those who would kill us. We need to err on the side of caution to protect American lives, period. It is insane that we are admitting people into our country, and we're not talking about one or two isolated instances, who then go on to seek to kill us. There is no way that this can be justified. There is no way that this is rational, and there's no way that this is reasonable. We're coming up on the 14th anniversary of 9/11. I wrote an extensive article for Front Page Magazine. It's available online for free. You can go to my website, michaelcutler.net. I've also included links to this article in articles that I've written for capsweb.org and for Front Page Magazine. I want you to take the time to read the article. It's a lengthy article. It's not a quick read. It's 27 pages long. I worked on this thing for quite a while because I didn't want to put in any hamburger helper. It's all beef. It's all meat. It's all examples. It's all quotes from the 9/11 Commission report, sections of law, and specific examples of individuals who game the immigration system to gain access to the United States and then become involved either in terrorism or espionage. This is foolish beyond words. 3,000 people died on 9/11. One of the things that enraged me the most was I had testified at a congressional hearing on May 20th, 1997, 4.5 years before 9/11, about the threat posed by fraud, lies committed in the immigration benefits program and in the process by which visas are adjudicated. We are allowing people in through the front door who want to kill us, and this has nothing to do with the Mexican border. That is why when people focus purely on the Mexican border, purely on the illegal side of the equation, they're missing the point. That's why I wrote an article over a year ago for Front Page Magazine The title I gave the article was Border Security and the Immigration Colander. We're being told by this administration and politicians from both parties that if we could just secure the Mexican border, all will be well with the world. And I said that that's the equivalent of being told that if you partially block one hole in the bottom of a colander that we use to drain pasta, colander can now be used as a bucket. It's an absurdity. Nobody that I know is that foolish to believe that. But think of how many people are accepting this notion that once we secure the Mexican border, and people will say to me, well, how about if we do that as a starting point? Starting point for what? Folks, we're at war. We're at war. Every morning I wake up, I'm fearful that if I turn on the news, I'm going to find out that something terrible has happened inside the United States. We're coming up on the end of the summer. And this time of year, I always feel a little bit uneasy. And this is, you know, just the way human nature is. Because it's late summer that we associate, of course, with the 9/11 attacks. I was here in New York when that happened. A New York City police helicopter heading to Ground Zero overflew my car. I eventually met one of the police officers who was on that helicopter. His partner died just about an hour after they flew over my car. He ran into one tower, his partner ran into the other tower, and the towers collapsed. This wasn't something I read about. This wasn't a newspaper article. This wasn't a television program. This happened 10 miles from my house. 10 miles from my house. And every time we get close to this time of year, the hair on the back of my neck tend to stand up. And I look at everything that this administration has done. And I listen to the nonsense being spewed by our leaders from both parties. And nobody wants to talk about the truth that's running for president right now. Donald Trump has done a good job of pointing at the Mexican border. But that's just one hole in the colander. And if you don't hire enough agents to enforce the law, enough agents to go after the fraud, we're spinning our wheels. We have 7,000 ICE agents. And I want you to think about this. If you go onto the websites and try to find out how many agents are out there, you can't find out. They will tell you how many inspectors we have at ports of entry and how many Border Patrol agents. But the last year that there were any statistics published about the number of ICE agents was 2013, and the number they gave was 7,000. And more than half of those agents are not doing immigration work, they're doing customs work. So they're worried about people producing counterfeit Gucci loafers and counterfeit luggage and that sort of thing and money laundering. A lot of kiddie porn cases. Go to the ICE website. You'll see it. I think it's vile and reprehensible that anybody would be involved with kiddie porn. Put them in jail. Castrate them. I don't care what you do to them. That's the lowest of the low. But we have so many police departments that can deal with kiddie porn. Immigration is a unique responsibility for the Department of Homeland Security. And there's certainly no shortage of work to be done. It's not as though we have 8 illegal aliens in the United States, and they say, well, there's not much for you guys to do, so you may as well go after people producing kiddie porn. We have 7,000 ICE agents. We probably have over 30 million illegal aliens. And I want you to remember what just 19 terrorists did to not only our country, but the world on 9/11. 19. We have millions of people and we don't know who they are and they're living in every town and city. And yes, Marco Rubio went out there and he said, yes, it's not only the border people overstay the visa and we need to finally track their comings and goings. I agree. That was called for in the Immigration Reform Act of 1996, I actually worked with the House Immigration Subcommittee Chief Counsel on that reform of the immigration laws. And one of the things it called for was the implementation of an entry-exit system so we could track whether or not aliens who entered the United States departed. Then the 9/11 Commission said, this is a requirement for national security. And around 2004, Accenture, a spinoff of the Arthur Andersen accounting firm of Enron notoriety, was given over $1 billion, to create what was then called U.S. Visit, to track the entry and departure of aliens. Never completed. I think part of it is because of the visa waiver program, because that was one of the component issues, that aliens from the countries that become members of the visa waiver list can't overstay their visas. Call me a cynic, but by not knowing whether or not people overstay, it wouldn't interfere with the countries that are added to the list of visa waiver countries. We now have 38 such countries. There should be zero. And in fact, just the other day, they were talking about ways they want to tighten up the visa waiver program. The only way to tighten it up, folks, is to eliminate it. We are at war with people who want to kill us. This is madness being perpetrated by some truly evil, greedy, selfish bums called the United States Chamber of Commerce. They created a program known as the Discover America Partnership, and they've partnered with the hotel, hospitality, and travel industries and some manufacturing concerns to push expansion of the visa waiver program, the Discover America Partnership. Obviously, they are not taking into account that ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and assorted other human garbage out there have already discovered America. This is all about greed and profit over the lives of Americans. They don't care who dies. Actually, perhaps they should have the Undertakers Association join them, because certainly they are drumming up business for the Undertakers. And I can only imagine that they're happy to have more business too, perhaps. If I sound angry, if I sound sarcastic, I am. I am. We have never gotten to the point in the history of this nation before where companies are making national security decisions for the United States, where the guy who's responsible for room service and hopefully clean linen on your bed when you go to a hotel is now deciding national security. This is lunacy. And when you watch most of the television programs, and I don't care what network, although I will tell you Newsmax and One American News Network, I'm thrilled to be on their programs, and I've been on their shows fairly routinely now. But you look at the other networks. When they talk about immigration, it's either a lawyer or a talk show host or a political pundit. When they talk about the military, they bring in former commandos, Navy SEALs, generals, admirals. Sure. When they talk about cancer, they bring in surgeons and oncologists and biochemists and physicians, because it's cancer. When they talk about espionage, they bring in the FBI. But when you talk about immigration, then the debate is being held by some political operatives, ignoring the fact that this is one of the most pivotal issues of national security, because that's the narrative. That's the narrative. Immigration, oh, it's a minor issue. So when Mr. Rubio goes out there, and he properly identifies the fact that we do have a problem with visa overstays and we need to track these people, that's fine. But if all you're doing is tracking them, you're not solving the problem, Mr. Rubio. It's believed that 40% of the illegals in the country did not run the border but came through ports of entry. They really don't even know. That's the number they've come up with, 40%. I mean, it's just amazing. I think they have a wheel in the basement, you know, like the Wheel of Fortune, and they spin it, and it's got percentages on it, so it stopped on 40%. We don't know what we don't know. Just like when they tell you 11 million illegal aliens, we probably have 35 million. God only knows. Literally. But simply tracking them is worthless. We need the agents. And back on 2013 was the last time they would even tell you how many agents we have. You can't find the numbers anymore. They will tell you that there's over 20,000 people doing immigration inspections, over 20,000 Border Patrol agents, 45,000 TSA employees. 45,000 TSA employees. Wow. But nobody knows how many ICE agents. All we know is that as of 2 years ago, there were 7,000. And there has not been any hiring that I'm aware of. And I'm sure people have retired or given up and quit. And more than half aren't even doing immigration work. So right now, if we're lucky, we have 3,000 immigration agents out there, 3,000, as compared with 45,000 TSA people. It's not enough to track the people that are overstaying. It's not enough to track the students who failed to go to school. Folks, you have to arrest them. What a novel thought. We need more judges. We need the jail space. You want to hire people? Hire people to do the work of immigration law enforcement. Because right now there are no consequences to overstaying a visa. There are no consequences for not going to the school you were admitted to attend. There are no consequences for taking a job you're not entitled to have. There are no consequences. Law enforcement depends on consequences. That's what deterrence is about. And you see the way it's done. You think about the way that drunk driving was approached. If we catch you drinking and driving, we're going to take your car, we're going to take your wallet, we're going to take your license, we're going to take your freedom. The numbers dropped. Texting and driving, the same thing. Yes, there are idiots that will continue to do it, but nobody ever says, oh, we have too many people with phones and driver's licenses, we can't do anything about it. If you look at the commercials, there's lots of them, they try to convince anybody that's stupid enough to text and drive that we're going to find you, we're going to do something to you. But you turn on the TV, you listen to the talking heads, well, we can't deport 12 million people. Okay, and? We certainly can deport a whole bunch. Nobody expects that everybody who drinks and drives is going to get caught. But nobody ever says there's just too many of them, so we can't do anything. We're given a false choice. And then the pollsters come out, and I hate the pollsters, I have to be honest with you. It's an industry unto itself. It's a silly industry. Polls, surveys. I feel like Family Feud. Survey says. So the pollsters come out, and they say, well, since we can't deport anyone, here are the choices. And they give people false choices. If you ask the average American, do you believe that somebody who violates the terms of their admission into the United States should face arrest and deportation? I'm willing to bet you 80% of the American people will say absolutely. But that choice is almost never on the menu. Since we can't arrest and deport everybody, should we give them citizenship? Well, put them in jail and torture them, you know, whatever. Fake choices. So then people will say, wow, if that's the only two choices. See, there's a choice that no one is given when they do the surveys. Do you believe there should be adverse consequences for people who violate the terms of their visa? I wish they could ask that question. Very simple. And then look at what the numbers are. See, figures don't lie, but liars can figure. And there's an agenda here, folks. There's an agenda. And then they come out and say, well, we just did a survey, and 70% of all Americans say we should, you know, give lawful status to the illegal aliens. I want to see the questions that were asked when they put those polls up there. Wouldn't that be interesting to see how they asked the question? To see what background information they may have provided with the poll? Because these polls, in my judgment, very often alter the perspectives so that the polls generate whatever it is they're looking to generate. That's the name of the game. How do we twist the conversation so that we can get to that answer that satisfies the people that we want to satisfy? It's all twisted. And then we come to this notion, as I said I would, about political correctness. And I want to spend a couple of minutes on political correctness, folks. I am politically correct. I've never used and never will use the N-word. I think it's a horrific term. I think it's despicable. It's disgusting. There are other similar words that are used to describe Jews and Italians and people of Asian background and so forth, Latino background. It's disgusting. It's not in my vernacular. I've joked that my kids have heard the F word more often than I want to admit, maybe too many years in law enforcement. But again, if it wasn't for that activity, none of us would be here, to be honest. And I'm not condoning cursing, don't misunderstand. And I know some of my friends may be offended by what I've just said. But the reality is, my biggest offensive words, the real dirty words, are the words of hatred. The words of hatred. Not bodily functions, not parts of the anatomy. Those are parts of the anatomy. You know, I've jokingly said, if you don't want to talk about someone's backside, you could call somebody an armpit. You know, armpits can be pretty smelly. I actually did that one day. I was angry at some guy who cut me off. I rolled down the window and I pointed at him and I said, "You're a smelly armpit." And there were some people with me in my car. They thought it was hysterical. And the driver I yelled at actually laughed, and I think he was embarrassed. What's the difference? It's a body part. The N-word I have no use for. The N-word's a whole other story. When people say, well, they don't want us to use the word alien because of political correctness, you're buying into a lie. Don't you understand? Because what you're now agreeing with the enemy here, these are the enemy, is that there's something wrong with being an alien. There's over 7 billion people living on the planet. There's about 310 million American citizens. Any one of those non-citizens who enters the United States becomes an alien by virtue of being inside our borders. Just as if I go to Canada or France or England, name the country, as soon as I cross their border, I'm an alien. Not an illegal alien. I'm not going to run borders. I'm going to abide by the law. But by law, you're an alien. And the immigration law simply says that an alien is any person, not a citizen or national of the United States. You'd be hard-pressed to tell me where the insult is. And everyone thinks, oh my God, he said alien. Thunderbolts are going to come out of the sky. No, it's just saying to somebody, hey, you're not an American. Well, that's right. If you come here from England or Germany or Israel or France or Mexico, you're not an American citizen. You're an alien. Where's the problem? And when people say, oh, we're being too politically correct. No, we're not. You see, that's the point. And so when people make that statement about political correctness, whether you realize it or not, you're reinforcing your opponent's position. You're giving credibility to your adversary. This has nothing, zero, to do with being politically correct, because you're claiming that the use of the word alien is insulting. Isn't. Then why say that this is about political correctness? Just like when people say, oh, those people were demonstrating and they were pro-immigrant, they want amnesty for everybody. That is not pro-immigrant. They are anti-enforcement, and we are pro-enforcement. And in fact, if you're pro-enforcement, then you're pro-immigrant. Because we admit legally, through the legal immigration system that I enforced, those laws for 30 years, it's under those laws that we admit 1 million people a year. It's impossible to be pro-enforcement and anti-immigrant. So when people say, well, they were demonstrating. The pro-immigrant folks were demonstrating. Unless they were demonstrating for immigration law enforcement, they weren't pro-immigrant. They were pro-anarchy. You know, most often, the victims of the crimes perpetrated by transnational criminals are the members of the ethnic immigrant communities. And this isn't about being Latino. As an immigration agent, I spent years investigating and arresting aliens from Asia, from Africa, from the Caribbean, from the Middle East, from Europe, from Canada. Understand something. There is nothing in the immigration law that has anything to do with Latinos or Latin America. It's another one of the lies. It's another false premise. So when people say, well, you know, we can't use the word alien because we have to be politically correct. No, that's bull. And when you say that, you're enforcing, you're backing up the folks who are advocates for anarchy. Political correctness has nothing to do with it, folks. Please don't give the adversaries that kind of credibility. They're not entitled to it. You see? Words matter. Had I not become an agent, my plan was to teach speech and debate on the college level. My degree was in communications, arts, and sciences. And I cringe, I absolutely cringe every time I hear this nonsense about, well, because of political correctness, we can't use the word alien. It has nothing to do with it. You're saying, when you say that, that the term alien is as hateful as the N-word, and it's not. So please, before you say something, think about what you're really saying. See, the whole problem with what we're doing as Americans is nobody's thinking. Nobody is giving any thought to what we're really discussing. There's nothing politically incorrect about using the word alien. Nothing. This is brainwash that has been very successful at convincing people that we have to call illegal aliens immigrants, so then we can be attacked as being anti-immigrant. You're putting ammunition in your enemy's gun when you say that this is about political correctness. Stop and think and see if what I'm saying doesn't make sense to you. The use of the word alien has nothing to do with political correctness. It is Orwellian. It is newspeak. It is a way of discrediting people who take a reasonable position. And we are falling for the trap when we talk about political correctness. It has nothing whatsoever to do with political correctness. You're being duped, and it's time to turn off that switch. It's time to call out those people who make the false accusations. You know, it's funny. There's a guy by the name of Brian Wilkes, and I debated him a bunch of times in the past. And, you know, this whole idea that somehow it's discriminatory to not give dreamers what they want and all these other folks what they want. But when he looked at this issue with the EB-5 visas, he said, oh, well, this is a different situation. These people are jumping the line. They're getting ahead. Wouldn't amnesty be getting ahead also? See, the other side gets away with saying all kinds of crazy stuff, and nobody ever seems to call them on it. So when I look at these statements from these groups that are advocates for amnesty, and then you realize that they have a very narrow interest of a particular ethnicity or whatever, you understand where their mindset is. You understand that their view is very different. And we have to call them on it, folks. Therein lies the problem. Are we really calling them out for what they're saying? And if we don't call them out for what we're saying, then that's really a problem. Because if we allow our opponents to get away with their false statements, then you really have a serious problem. Because it's through those false statements. It's Brent Wilkes, by the way, not Brian Wilkes. I've debated this guy at MSNBC. Brent Wilkes, who is a big advocate for the Dreamers and everything else, when he heard about this program, said, oh, no, these people are jumping the line. Because Brent Wilkes is the executive director of the League of United Latin American Citizens. It's a Hispanic civil rights group. And he's complaining about the EB-5 program, which is a legal program. It needs to be either ended or modified. But he opposes it. Now, if this is a so-called immigrant rights group, why is he opposing a legal system that allows aliens into the United States? You have to believe that, I hate to say it, but it sounds like the race card. Because there aren't too many Latino groups that are doing this. This is mostly people from Asia and other parts of the world. It's remarkable. Because I've debated Brent Wilkes. So suddenly, he's in opposition to a program because it's going to get people to the head of the line and amnesty won't. But nobody's going to call Brent Wilkes out, but I will. Because Brent Wilkes has an agenda, and Brent Wilkes' agenda, and it's right there in the ABC News report, his agenda is to open up the gates between Latin America and the United States. The EB-5 visa program generally does not involve Latin America. It could, but it involves mostly other parts of the world. So Mr. Brent Wilkes doesn't like that because this doesn't have anything specifically to do with Latin America. It's not reported on that way. But read between the lines and you understand what the agenda is. So the people that are quick to use the race card are themselves racist. It's truly astonishing. But it didn't get reported that way. But having debated this guy, knowing where his head's at, I can assure you that's what the problem is. Because this guy has no problem with providing amnesty to millions of people who snuck into the United States. And he is a very strident advocate for legalizing people who came here illegally. But if you come here from other parts of the world, then we've got to stop you. It's very remarkable. It's very remarkable. Our opponents aren't smart. Our opponents aren't ethical. And it's not that difficult to pick them apart and pick apart their arguments. These are the same people who would be using the term political correctness. And that's not true. This has nothing to do with being politically correct. So it's something for you to think about. It's about developing an understanding of the issue and an understanding of the words so that we don't fall into the traps that they try to set. That's the most critical part here. Don't allow your opponents to define you or set the traps that we knowingly walk into or unwittingly walk into. It's truly amazing. By the way, there was an article about how a woman who was an Air Force veteran was killed by an illegal alien. He came into her house and attacked her. You know, it's story after story. And when this whole thing broke with Kate Steinle, everyone said, oh my God, and the other side tried to portray this as a one-time deal. And who's on the other side? The liars at the Wall Street Journal. The people over at CNN who said, oh no, you know, this is an isolated incident. Folks, I don't know what these people are thinking about, but the facts refute everything that we're being told by these people. The Wall Street Journal has a position that says there's nobody coming across the Mexican border. It's quiet there. I was at an event with the David Horowitz Foundation, the David Horowitz Freedom Center, back in November, and a reporter from the Wall Street Journal said, oh, there's nobody coming across the border. You know, everything is fine. It's astonishing. It's astonishing. For the longest time, the open borders crowds would say, oh, illegal aliens commit much fewer crimes than American citizens, which is the position of the Wall Street Journal. It's a lie, but they tell the lie because they have an agenda. And their agenda is to flood the United States with cheap labor, with tourists and foreign students. And that's the agenda. And that's the agenda with most of the political candidates. I'm very glad that Donald Trump came out and said what he said about the border. But I'm waiting to see what he has to say about the other parts of our dysfunctional immigration system. We can't afford to simply plug one of the holes in the bottom of that colander. That's not going to get us where we need to be, folks. I usually run 90 minutes, but I think I'm going to give up the ghost today after an hour. I think my throat's had enough. But I hope the program has been, as always, I hope it's helpful to you in understanding what the issues are. I so much appreciate you joining me. Please check out the websites that I always like to talk about, michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org. Look at that heroin story. It'll startle you, and especially the follow-up at front page. Also, Progressives for Immigration Reform, The Social Contract. These are wonderful websites, and I'm very glad that they give me the opportunity, the platform, if you will, to provide my perspectives. I plan to be back here again next week at the same time, right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Between now and then, folks, have a great weekend. I look forward to seeing you next week, and please remember, democracy is not a spectator sport. Good night, everybody.